In the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, one man dared to achieve the impossible. His name was Lord Commander Solar Macarius, and his legend shines brighter than any in 1,000 years. Macarius was no transhuman Primarch or super soldier. He was a mortal man, a general of the Imperial Guard. Yet he would come to be ranked alongside the greatest military heroes in human history. In just 7 years of relentless warfare, Macarius reconquered nearly 1,000 lost worlds for the Imperium, extending the Emperor's light to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. He was hailed as a savior and later canonized as a saint. But his story is no simple fable of unbroken triumph. It is a tale of colossal ambition and hubris, of glory hard won and tragedy endured. A man who defeated every external enemy, yet ultimately was halted by the limits of those around him and by the dark pragmatism of the Imperium he served. Macarius was born in 356 M41 on the frontier world of Donia in Segmentum Pacificus. He was heir to the planetary governor of Donia. His father was named Pella, coincidentally echoing the name of Alexander the Great's ancient birthplace on Terra. From the start, greatness was expected of him. He came of age at a time when the Imperium was still recovering from the Age of Apostasy, a period of civil strife that had left many worlds isolated or in rebellion. The young Macarius cut his teeth, putting down such insurgencies and border wars. By his early 20s, he had risen to the rank of general in the Astra Militarum, known for decisive action and bold strategy that set him apart from his peers. One early campaign cemented Macarius's reputation, the Roxane Rebellion. During that conflict, Macarius's forces not only crushed a dangerous uprising, but also rescued the life of Lord Commander Solar Phillips, the overall Imperial commander of Segmentum Solar, who had been ambushed. Phillips, grateful and impressed, recognized Macarius's brilliance. He took the young general under his wing and eventually named Macarius as his chosen successor. This was an unprecedented honor for someone so junior, but Macarius's trajectory was unmistakable. In 386 M41, Lord Solar Phillips was killed in battle, felled during the Lamort landings. In accordance with his wishes, Macarius inherited Phillips's title and command. At the astonishing age of 30, Macarius became the new Lord Commander Solar, supreme commander of all Imperial military forces in Segmentum Solar, and one of the High Lords of Terra. He was the youngest ever to hold the post. Many were shocked at this meteoric rise, but those who had seen Macarius in action did not doubt his capability. He possessed a charisma that inspired devotion and a tactical genius that had already saved worlds. Macarius traveled to Terra only once, for his formal investiture as Lord Commander Solar. Surrounded by the awe of the Imperial Palace, he reportedly said little, but the ceremony only steeled his resolve to fulfill what he saw as his destiny. Returning to Segmentum Solar, he immediately put his new authority to use. Taking command of several veteran regiments from his homeworld, the Donian regiments, Macarius launched a string of swift victories to secure the Segmentum's fringes. Between 387 M41 and 391 M41, his forces reconquered the worlds of Land's End, Morbellum, and Jalfrezis the Thraid, planets that had fallen out of Imperial contact. Macarius swept these worlds back into the Emperor's fold with ruthless efficiency. Each success further burnished his legend. But conquering a few stray worlds was not enough for Macarius. He hungered for something far grander. It was then that Macarius unveiled an audacious plan. He petitioned the High Lords of Terra to sanction a massive new crusade of expansion, one to rival the Emperor's own Great Crusade of Antiquity. He proposed to push the Imperium's borders outward and reclaim hundreds of lost worlds. To many, this sounded like madness or hubris. Such an undertaking had not been attempted in millennia. But Macarius's confidence was contagious. His recent successes and fiery determination convinced the High Lords, and perhaps they figured if anyone could pull it off, it was this young prodigy. Permission was granted. Macarius was effectively appointed War Master of a grand imperial crusade. Vast resources were placed at his disposal. Entire army groups of the Imperial Guard, fleets of the Imperial Navy, Titan battle groups from the Mechanicus, and more. Over the next year, he organized his forces into 7 mighty army groups. Macarius himself would lead the first army group. He appointed 6 trusted generals, men who had proven themselves under his command, to lead the others. These were General Sejanus, Tarka, Lysander, Borgin Crassus, Arian, and Cyrus of Laurentine. Each army group numbered millions of soldiers, with armor, artillery, and starship support beyond measure. In early 392 M41, Macarius gathered this vast host on his homeworld of Donia, soon to be rechristened Macaria in his honor. There, on the eve of departure, Macarius addressed his troops and set the tone for the campaign. He spoke of destiny and the Emperor's will, famously declaring that humanity would claim the stars that had been lost. His words electrified the armies. Thus began the legendary Macarian Crusade. In 392 M41, Macarius's crusade fleet departed Macaria and plunged into the unexplored territories at the far western edge of the galaxy. This was wild space, stretching into the halo zone beyond the Astronomicon's guidance, realms where the Imperium's light had never shone or had been extinguished long ago. Many of these worlds had been isolated since the Age of Apostasy, left to fall into anarchy, heresy, or the clutches of aliens. Macarius was determined to bring them all back into the Imperial fold. The Crusade's first major test came against the so-called Cult of the Angel of Fire. This hostile regime dominated the Karsk star system and preached a twisted faith centered on a being they called the Angel of Fire. Macarius led an assault to liberate Karsk. During the fierce battles, the true nature of the cult's deity was revealed. It was a greater demon of Tsinch, a chaos entity masquerading as a divine figure. The wounded Macarius found himself face to face with this demonic angel amidst the burning ruins of the cult's stronghold. The daemon offered Macarius power in exchange for his soul, but Macarius rejected the temptations outright. With the aid of his army's accompanying confessors and a well-placed plasma blast, he banished the greater demon back to the warp. The cult's power was broken in one stroke. Karsk was freed, and Macarius had shown that neither sorcery nor terror could make him falter. This dramatic victory set the tone. The Crusade would tolerate no evil, human or otherwise, that stood in the way of the Imperium. From there, Macarius pushed onward into Segmentum Pacificus, engaging a vast array of enemies. His forces encountered lost human civilizations, some advanced and independent, others degenerate and ruled by tyrants. They confronted belligerent Xenos empires, marauding orc warlords, Eldar pirate fleets, heretical chaos warbands, the full menagerie of threats lurking in the darkness. No matter what, Macarius pressed forward relentlessly, adapting to each new foe. On some worlds, diplomacy and show of force convinced isolated human colonies to willingly rejoin the Imperium. On many others, only war could decide the outcome, and Macarius triumphed again and again. It is impossible to recount every battle in detail, but a few stood out even at the time as legendary. In 392 M41, during the first year of the Crusade, Macarius's second army group under General Sejanus fought across the desert world of Persepolis. Persepolis, a hive world lost for 5,000 years, was recontacted and brought back into Imperial compliance after heavy fighting in the dunes of its Gedrosia desert. During that campaign, Macarius himself, traveling between fronts as needed, discovered the tomb of an ancient imperial explorer known as Indijona the Vagrant. Within the dusty vault, Macarius found Indijona's ornate winged golden helmet, a relic of a bygone age. Macarius took this helm as a trophy and wore it for the rest of the crusade, a symbol that even the secrets of the past would bow to the Imperium's new triumphs. In 393 M41, on the world of Zaga IV, Macarius's forces clashed with a company of Chaos Space Marines, traitor Astartes who had been terrorizing the sector. During the battle, a bolter round fired by one of these Chaos Marines struck Macarius square in the chest. Incredibly, the explosive shell lodged in his armor, but failed to detonate. Macarius pulled the dud bolt round from his breastplate and continued fighting, undeterred. The priests at his side proclaimed it a miracle of the Emperor's divine protection. To the Crusade's soldiers, this was further proof that Macarius was blessed. Many began to regard him with outright reverence, as if he were a living conduit of the Emperor's will. In 395 M41, the Crusade fought a bitter campaign on the industrial world of Thoth. There, General Arian's 6th Army Group became bogged down against dug-in heretic rebels. Macarius arrived with reinforcements from his 1st Army Group and executed a brilliant flanking maneuver, breaking the deadlock. The last enemy bastion fell shortly thereafter. Thoth's conquest showed a pattern. Whenever Macarius appeared on a battlefield, the stalemate would break and victory swiftly followed. One of the toughest challenges came from the advanced human realm of Adrantis V. In 395 to 397 M41, General Borgin Crassus's 5th Army Group laid siege to this highly developed, fiercely independent planet. Adrantis V possessed technology and defenses that rivaled the Imperium's, and they resisted ferociously. The fighting ground on for 2 years, becoming a war of attrition that chewed up Imperial regiments at an alarming rate. Crassus lost up to 90% of his forces trying to take the planet's fortresses. Finally, Macarius intervened personally with an extreme solution. He ordered an ancient comet that was orbiting the system to be diverted from its path and directed to impact Adrantis V. In an act of calculated devastation, the comet was guided, via painstaking naval maneuvers and gravity tethers, into the planet. The comet's apocalyptic impact obliterated Adrantis V's primary continent and threw the world into chaos. With their cities shattered and population decimated, the defenders surrendered to the Imperium. Adrantis V was conquered not by trenches and laser guns, but by turning a celestial body into a weapon. This grim tactic underscored Macarius's mindset. No price was too high and no measure too drastic if it achieved victory for the Emperor. Late in 397 M41, the Crusade had to contend with a massive orc incursion. An enormous orc, waaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaaa orcs, led by a hulking war boss, brought huge numbers and brute strength to bear. Macarius did not shy away from the green tide. He met it head-on. A series of colossal battles ensued, one of the greatest being remembered as the Battle of Calastin. At Calastin, Macarius's forces faced millions upon millions of orcs. In the brutal fighting, Macarius was even wounded by the orc war boss in hand-to-hand combat, a rare moment where his life was in real peril. Yet even this could not halt him. He recovered quickly, some would say miraculously fast, from his injuries and returned to the front. Eventually, the Imperial firepower and Macarius's unyielding leadership ground down the orc horde. The war boss was slain, and the Wai shattered into disorganized remnants. Imperial scholars later hyperbolically claimed that 23 billion orcs were exterminated in Macarius' campaign against them. Whether or not the body count was that astronomical, it's clear the orc threat was thoroughly crushed. By now, Macarius' soldiers had started to believe that their commander could not be defeated by any foe. He had overcome aliens, heretics, traitor marines, demons, you name it. Not all episodes of the Crusade were shining examples of honor. The pressures of constant warfare and Macarius's drive for results sometimes led to brutality. For instance, on one world, General Arian, the same who fought on Thoth, went too far. Frustrated by local resistance, he ordered such horrendous reprisals, slaughtering civilian populations wholesale, that even his own veteran troops were appalled. Some of Arian's regiments mutinied, refusing to continue by committing atrocities. Arian responded by executing the mutineers to the last man, a massacre that earned that region the ominous name Arian's Wrath. Macarius was furious when he learned of this. He demanded discipline and piety, not wanton butchery of fellow imperial citizens. Arian was reprimanded, and some say quietly removed from command later. Still, the dark deed was done, a grim footnote that the Crusade's glory was not without shadows. Through it all, Macarius kept his vast forces coordinated and focused on the ultimate objective. He made excellent use of the resources at hand. The Crusade was not just the Imperial Guard. It was practically the entire might of the Imperium mobilized. Over 100 different Imperial Guard regiments took part, drawn from famous worlds like Cardia, Catacan, Talon, and more. These included jungle fighters, desert raiders, hive-born shock troops, a diversity that Macarius wielded expertly, assigning each to battles that suited their specialties. The Imperial Navy ensured space superiority, ferrying armies across the void and bombarding entrenched enemies from orbit when necessary. Several Space Marine chapters lent aid as well, providing elite contingents for critical assaults. A company of the Space Wolves under Wolf, Lord Ulrich Grimfang, for example, secured the ice world of Jotungarth for Macarius, and the Star Phantoms chapter undertook the Purge of Viridia, a deadly jungle world during the Crusade. The Adeptus Mechanicus contributed Titan legions and cohorts of cybernetic Skitarii to support key battles. Knight Household, the giant war knights of feudal worlds, marched under Macarius's banner, their nobles honored to fight under the great Lord Solar. He presented those knightly allies with personal battle standards called the Banner of Macarius Triumphant to commemorate their service. In short, Macarius commanded a coalition of imperial power on a scale rarely seen. It had been 10 millennia since the galaxy had witnessed such a concerted imperial offensive. The results were staggering. The Imperium's frontier was pushed outward at a speed and scale that defied bureaucratic comprehension. In the first year of the Crusade, roughly 100 worlds were brought into imperial control. By the end of the second year, the tally had grown by several hundred more. After 3 years of constant campaigning, nearly 700 planets had fallen to Macarius's armies. Each success was followed by the work of consolidation. Ecclesiarchy, missionaries would establish churches and preach the imperial creed to the newly conquered populations, while inquisitors and commissars rooted out lingering heresies or Zeno's influences. Imperial governance was imposed, sometimes gently, sometimes by force. Many worlds gratefully accepted reunion with the greater human empire. Others required harsh example setting. There were instances of entire cities being razed to cow a planet into submission. Macarius was pragmatic. He preferred a world intact and compliant, but if the only way to ensure no future rebellion was to make a bloody example, he would. He famously said, "The meaning of victory is not merely to defeat your enemy, but to destroy him utterly, to leave no remnant that could rise again." In practice, that meant some worlds were almost depopulated if they resisted too hard. But most often, once the initial shock and awe passed, Macarius's forces restored order, and life under the Aquila resumed. By the year 399 M41, the Macarian Crusade had achieved unprecedented success. Macarius's Grand Army stood at the very edge of the galaxy, deep into the Halo Zone near Galactic West, farther than any Imperial banners had been carried since the Great Crusade of Legend. Nearly 1,000 worlds had been brought back into the Imperium's embrace. The Crusade's forces were effectively undefeated by any external enemy. It should have been the moment of Macarius's ultimate triumph. And yet, it was here, on the brink of ultimate victory, that the Crusade finally ground to a halt, not because of any foe, but because of the limits of human endurance. As Macarius gazed beyond the mapped stars, he was eager to push onward into the uncharted void. His eyes were set on distant points of light that no Imperial cartographer had ever marked. However, his generals and soldiers, the men and women who had followed him through 7 years of constant war, reached their breaking point. They were exhausted. They had been fighting continuously, light years from home and suffering immense hardships on world after world. Now they stood at the threshold of the unknown, facing regions where even the Emperor's psychic beacon, the Astronomicon, could not guide them. Rumors spread through the ranks that beyond this point lay doom. Navigators might not steer safely, astropaths would be out of communication range, and supply lines would be impossible. Superstitious fear took hold as well. Scout detachments sent into the Halo stars had disappeared or returned insane, babbling about ghost planets and stars that whispered curses. The rank-and-file guardsmen, hardened though they were, felt a primordial terror of venturing into that cosmic darkness. A delegation of Macarius's top generals, those he trusted most, finally worked up the courage to confront him. They respectfully but firmly requested that the Crusade stop here and return to Imperial space to consolidate its gains. They pleaded that the troops were at the end of their strength, that pushing further would invite disaster. They pointed out the practical difficulties of waging war beyond the Astronomicon's light, and how the Imperium might lose contact with them entirely. It was, in truth, a mutiny of reason. The generals were refusing to proceed. Macarius's reaction was as explosive as it was sorrowful. He was absolutely furious. He viewed this as a betrayal by the people he had led to glory. According to accounts, he accused his generals and troops of cowardice and lack of faith. After all their victories over tangible enemies, they now flinched at shadows and distance. Macarius's dream was to march forever onward. Being told no at the very edge of the galaxy was like a dagger to his heart. Some say Macarius, in his rage, even wept, not in weakness but in sheer frustration that his will alone was no longer enough. He railed at his assembled commanders, but they stood firm, albeit with bowed heads. For the first time, Macarius could not simply command reality to bend to his ambition. Seething and heartbroken, Macarius had no choice but to yield to the inevitable. He retreated to his private chambers aboard his flagship and closed himself off. For days he spoke to no one. Rumor has it he spent that time in a bitter haze of alcohol, drowning his disappointment in Amasek. The great conqueror, who had been like a force of nature, suddenly fell silent, locked away with his anguish. His officers and soldiers waited anxiously. Some feared he might even take his own life or do something rash. Others whispered prayers that the Emperor would guide their lord through this dark night of the soul. He was heard to bitterly lament that he did not have braver heroes at his command, that the heroes of old would not have balked as his men did. At last, Macarius emerged. Gone was the fire in his eyes. Those who saw him said he looked as if he had aged 10 years in a week. In a calm, measured tone, he announced that the Crusade was over. the armies would turn back toward home. The war was won. It was time to return and secure what they had achieved. Upon hearing this, the exhausted soldiers cheered for Macarius. They still loved and admired him deeply. And if their beloved Lord Solar said it was time to go back, they celebrated him as the hero who would lead them home safely. The generals breathed sighs of relief. The worst confrontation of their careers was past. But Macarius's personal triumph had turned to ashes. He would comply with his men's wishes, but inside his spirit was broken. He had finally been defeated, not by any Xenos warlord or traitor, but by the limits of human resolve. The Grand Fleet, now a star-spanning caravan of victorious legions and captured world's tithes, began the journey back to Imperial space. Macarius planned to travel to Terra and present the High Lords with the news of nearly 1,000 worlds reclaimed for the Imperium. However, fate intervened one last time. In mid-transit in the year 400 M41, Lord Commander Solar Macarius died. The official Imperial announcement was that he succumbed to a virulent jungle fever, an illness he had contracted on the swamp world of Jucha during the Crusade. The fever had lain dormant and then struck suddenly during the return voyage, taking even Macarius's formidable constitution by surprise. Despite the best efforts of the fleet's medici, the great hero passed away, reportedly whispering the Emperor's name with his final breath. That is the story as told to the masses, tragic but mundane. The truth of Macarius's death, however, is far more sinister and shrouded in secrecy. Over time, fragments of information and whispered testimonies have suggested that Macarius's end was not a simple disease at all, but a deliberate act of conspiracy. Recall the battle on Loki against the traitor General Richter, who had turned to Nurgle's worship. Macarius had indeed been infected by heinous plagues during that campaign. By the time the Crusade was ending, those diseases were ravaging him from within. Unofficial accounts indicate that Macarius was suffering terribly on the voyage home, his health in rapid decline, his body failing under the creeping corruption of Nurgle's toxins. The high powers of the Imperium, perhaps an inquisitorial cabal or certain high lords, were faced with a dilemma. Macarius was the glorious hero of the age. To have him arrive on Terra as a dying, plague-ridden man would tarnish the almost saintly image that had been built around him. They needed Macarius to remain a symbol of hope and triumph, unsullied by weakness or chaos. And so the grim decision was made. According to hidden testimonies that later surfaced, an agent of the Officio Assassinorum was embedded among Macarius's honor guard. This assassin, identity unknown, awaited the opportune moment. When Macarius's condition worsened to the brink, and he lay bedridden and feverish, the assassin struck. With a swift, possibly merciful poison or blade, the agent killed Lord Macarius. It was a clean death, sparing him the indignity of wasting away and potentially succumbing fully to Nurgle's rot. To ensure the subterfuge remained secret, it's said this same assassin then eliminated Inquisitor Hieronymus Drake, Macarius's chief liaison with the Inquisition, who was either involved in the plot or aware of it. Both deaths were then attributed to the mysterious fever from Jucha. In this way, the narrative was controlled. Macarius died a tragic but natural death. He became a martyred hero at the height of his glory, not a weakened victim of chaos. The Imperial propaganda machine could thus canonize him without complication. Only a handful of people ever knew the truth, and they ensured it was buried. Of course, in the Grand Imperium, secrets rarely remain completely sealed. Over the years, rumors of this dark chapter leaked out, pieced together by inquisitive minds and hinted at in restricted archives. It adds a sobering footnote. The Imperium that Macarius served may have repaid him with a dose of treachery, albeit in the name of preserving his legend. Macarius had always been ready to die for the Imperium. In the end, the Imperium made that choice for him. Regardless, the official line held firm. The great Macarius had died of illness during the voyage home. When the fleet returned to Macarius's homeworld, they carried not only the spoils of 1,000 worlds, but the body of the man who had won them. The galaxy mourned. On Macaria, formerly Donia, a magnificent state funeral was held. Dignitaries from across the Imperium converged to pay homage. The High Lords of Terra, ranking ecclesiarchs of the Church, tech priests of the Mechanicus, and decorated Imperial Guard commanders all assembled under the somber sky of Macaria to honor the fallen Lord Solar. 1,000,000 troops, men and women who had fought in the Crusade, formed an honor guard that stretched 4 kilometers. Macarius's corpse, preserved and armored in full regalia, lay in a grand sarcophagus borne by a gilded tank chassis. In a traditional gesture of respect, 100 Imperial Guard generals who had served in the Crusade stepped forward, one by one, to lay their swords on Macarius's coffin. It signified that they were relinquishing their command in deference to the greatest commander among them. Many in the crowd openly wept, an unusual display in the grim Imperium, as hymns echoed. The man who had seemed invincible was gone, and the void he left was immense. Not long after, the ecclesiarchy officially canonized Macarius as a saint of the imperial cult. Perhaps this was expected. The common soldiers had already revered him as a living saint, and even Macarius's more secular-minded peers acknowledged that his feats bordered on the miraculous. The ecclesiarchy is always eager to embrace a popular hero, especially one who can serve as a symbol of faith. Saint Macarius was proclaimed patron of war leaders and conquerors. His homeworld was renamed Macoria permanently and declared a shrine world. Over his tomb, the Imperium raised a colossal cathedral, its spires reaching into the sky, filled with sculptures and frescoes depicting scenes from the Macarian Crusade. Pilgrims began arriving from across the Imperium to pray at Macarius's resting place. To this day, thousands of the faithful arrive on Macaria annually, kneeling before the marble statue of the Lord Solar, asking his intercession in battle or giving thanks for victories won. Some particularly devout followers even attempt the pilgrimage of Macarius, a grand tour following the route of the Macarian Crusade through space, visiting many of the worlds he conquered. It's a perilous endeavor, since many of those fringe worlds remain dangerous, and very few who set out on the pilgrimage ever complete it. Most die along the way, claimed by the same perils of war and void that Macarius once navigated. Still, the tradition persists as a test of faith and endurance, dedicated to the saint who nearly reached the edge of the galaxy. However, even as Macarius was being immortalized, the empire he forged began to unravel. With Macarius no longer at the helm, the unity he had imposed on disparate worlds and ambitious commanders disintegrated. The new territories fell into turmoil in what became known as the Macarian Heresy. For 70 years after Macarius's death, the regions he had conquered were consumed by civil war and rebellion. Many of Macarius's subordinate generals, who had once been brothers in arms, turned into rivals and warlords. Some crowned themselves kings of the worlds they garrisoned, refusing to cede power to any other authority. Others feuded over boundaries and spoils. The freshly liberated planets, seeing the Imperial forces fight among themselves, took the opportunity to rise up again, or assert independence. Chaos, in short, reigned in the aftermath of the Crusade. It was a bitter coda. Nearly 1,000 worlds had been won for the Imperium, only for a large portion of them to slip away or fall into anarchy when their conqueror was no longer present. The High Lords of Terra eventually responded by unleashing fresh forces to quell this anarchy. several Space Marine chapters and Adeptus Astartes, strike forces were dispatched in what amounted to a second wave of conquests, but this time aimed at Imperial rebels and recalcitrant generals. Over decades, these Space Marines and Loyalist Guard units put down the rogue commanders, enforced Imperial rule, and punished traitors. By the time the Makarian heresy was declared ended, around 470 M41, stability had been largely restored. Even so, a number of the worlds Makarius had added were lost again, some depopulated by the fighting, others intentionally abandoned by the Imperium as too troublesome. In the end, perhaps half or more of his conquests remained firmly Imperial. The rest became footnotes or required continual suppression. It was as if Alexander the Great's empire fragmented among his generals once he was gone, which, fittingly, was exactly what happened to Makarius's empire. Despite this troubled legacy on the ground, Makarius's legend emerged unscathed. Indeed, it grew even grander with time. The Imperium chose to remember the glory, not the shortcomings. In official histories and popular lore, Makarius is celebrated as the greatest Imperial Guard commander who ever lived. He is often referred to as the Second Alexander, or the Savior of a Thousand Worlds. No one has ever replicated his feat of conquering so much, so fast. Over the centuries, whenever the Imperium has launched new campaigns or faced desperate wars, the figure of Makarius is invoked as an ideal of leadership and daring. In the military academies, cadets study Makarius's campaigns to glean lessons in strategy, though wise instructors also quietly note the logistical overstretch and cautionary elements of the Crusade's end. The most prestigious medal an Imperial officer can earn for tactical brilliance is the Makarian Cross, named in Makarius's honor. To receive the Makarian Cross is to be compared to the great Lord Solar himself, a rare accolade that only the most ingenious and bold commanders attain. Makarius's name also lives on in war materiel. The Adeptus Mechanicus developed a pattern of heavy tank known as the Makarius Heavy Tank, honoring the Lord Solar's penchant for overwhelming firepower. This tank is a super-heavy battle tank, smaller than a Baneblade but still a giant on the battlefield, designed to bring the kind of decisive might that Makarius would appreciate. In void warfare, several Imperial Navy vessels over the years have been christened with Makarius's name or variants of it, such as the battleship Lord Solar Makarius and the cruiser Makaria Victrix, hoping to inspire fear in the enemy and courage in the crew through association with his legend. One of the strangest and most secret chapters of Makarius's posthumous influence was the Imperium's attempt to clone him. In an experimental program known as the Afriel Strain, the genetic template of Makarius was used to create hundreds of clones with the idea of possibly raising a successor that could emulate the original's genius. Unfortunately, or perhaps mercifully, the project was a failure. Roughly 500 Makarius clones were grown. Almost all manifested unpredictable defects or met with misfortune. A few survived long enough to serve in minor roles. One female clone, Lorii, served in a penal legion and died in combat, for instance. But none came close to measuring up to the true Makarius. Whatever mix of qualities the real Makarius possessed, leadership, charisma, cunning, faith, it was not something that could simply be copied in a laboratory. The Afriel Strain program was quietly abandoned, the implication being that Makarius was one of a kind. What are we to make of Lord Solar Makarius? In the final analysis, he was a man of contrasts. He was utterly loyal to the Emperor and filled with genuine religious devotion. Yet he was also personally ambitious and gloried in conquest for conquest's sake. He brought illumination to countless worlds, yet left many in ruins. He was celebrated as a liberator by some populations and cursed as a destroyer by others. In him, the Imperium's noblest virtues and its harshest cruelties intersected. Perhaps that is why he has become such a mythical figure. He represents the Imperium itself, in all its stern glory and tragic darkness. As one veteran of the Crusade dryly remarked, Macarius was no holy immortal. He was a man, a very great man, and in some ways a very wicked one. This frank assessment highlights that, even in legend, Macarius's humanity, with all its virtue and vice, remains evident. Macarius's life invites comparison to the great conquerors of ancient history, those few bits of Terran history that are still remembered in the far future. Indeed, the parallels to Alexander the Great are deliberate and numerous. Like Alexander, Macarius was born in the year 356, albeit 356 M41 in Macarius's case, became a general while young, cut a swathe of victories virtually unmatched in scope, and died suddenly before the age of 45, after his troops refused to march further. And just as Alexander's empire fragmented among his generals, so did Macarius's conquests fall apart after his passing. Yet both figures left an enduring legend that far outlasted their mortal lives. In the Imperium of the 41st, now 42nd millennium, that legend is a beacon. When Imperial citizens pray for deliverance from invading armies, they invoke Saint Macarius. When a newly minted guard colonel seeks inspiration on how to achieve the impossible, he looks to Macarius's example. The legacy of Macarius is so towering that even the current Lord Commander Solar, a title rarely granted since, is measured against him. He has become, in essence, a benchmark for the Imperium's heroes. As one veteran of the Crusade later said of Macarius, he was no saint. He was a man, a very great man, and in some ways a very wicked one. Even in myth, that complexity lingers. To be sure, not everyone remembers the full truth. The average guardsman knows Macarius as that great saint general who won 1,000 worlds and never lost a battle, and that is enough. Myths have power, and Macarius has ascended into myth. The High Lords and Ecclesiarchy are content to let his legend motivate and console the masses. After all, in a galaxy where horrors abound, the Imperium survives on faith. Faith in the God Emperor and in those heroes who carry out his will. Lord Commander Solar Macarius was the last great conqueror of the Imperium. No crusade on such a scale has been attempted since. Perhaps none will, until the end of times. His story is equal parts inspiration and cautionary tale. It reminds us that bold action can reshape the galaxy, but also that even the mightiest hero is mortal. Macarius reached for the stars, and for a brief moment, he held them in his grasp. Had fate and his own followers allowed, he would have kept going, ever onward into the endless night. In the end, Macarius achieved immortality, not in body, but in legacy. His name will be spoken as long as humanity endures among the stars. Whenever the Imperium needs to remember what sheer human will and courage can accomplish, the tale of Macarius will be told. He was a man who dared to dream of the Imperium's expansion when others were content to defend and hide. He reignited the spirit of conquest in a time of decay. And though he fell short of his ultimate goal, what he did achieve was extraordinary. Nearly 1,000 worlds owe their allegiance, at least initially, to his actions. As Macarius himself once said on the eve of battle, "The stars are ours." For 7 glorious years, he made that declaration true for the Imperium of Man, carving a legend across the galaxy that remains unmatched. Macarius was the brightest star of his age, and though he burned out too soon, the afterglow of his deeds continues to inspire the Imperium even today. Even now, centuries later, Imperial commanders and common citizens alike look to the legend of Macarius for inspiration. His saga remains proof that in the grim darkness of the far future, one person's faith and courage can change the course of history, even if only for a while. He will forever be remembered as a symbol of the Imperium's unyielding resolve and the heights that human determination can reach.